Because we have nothing else better to do, here's Digital Dave.
I can burp my ABCs!
And Fast Eddie.
Oh, no.
On EAA Radio.
And it's a slow morning. This is Digital Dave, but I will not demonstrate.
No, absolutely not.
Thank you.
I'm Fast Eddie, and I'm going so slow this morning, I think I'm backing up.
There you go. And we are joined by a whole cadre of people that has B-29 stuff written all over their shirts.
Ah, B-29. You think they're associated with Fifi?
I don't know. I just want to know if there's any extra seats. You guys need ballast on for takeoff? I mean, I'm good at that.
I'd be happy to sit in the nose and make sure the airplane's balanced on your next flight.
So why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
Go ahead, Paul. I'm Paul Stoikoff. I'm one of the piloting commands on Fifi.
Dave Miller. I'm the crew chief and also flight engineer on Fifi.
And I'm Chris Trowbridge. I'm the public information officer for the squadron.
Okay, my son was out looking at Fifi last night on the ConocoPhillips Plaza, and he noticed that the engines are named.
The engines are named.
1, 2, 3, 4 just wasn't good enough, huh?
There's a quick story to that. Our project manager, John Agather, who's the son of Fifi, one of the sons of Fifi, he was brought in to account for all the money that was going to be spent on the re-engine project. When I started this, I was referring to the engines by number of their position and by number of which ones we were doing first and second and third, and he was getting all confused. So he decided to, he said, wait. Let's just name I'm going to name the engines. We're going to refer to them by name. So it was Rita Hayworth, Betty Grable, Ingrid Bergman, and Mitzi Gaynor. And it just kind of stuck, and I did some research, and I did find that back in the day, some crew chiefs did name their engines, and they do all have a different personality, so there are some names.
Which one's your favorite?
My favorite or my least favorite?
Both, yeah.
What I call my high maintenance.
So even then.
Yeah, Rita's my high maintenance engine.
Very good. Let's talk about the story of how Fifi came to pass. I mean, where did this airplane come from? Somebody must have thought that this was crazy to take on such a large aircraft as a museum project and try and keep it flying.
It started with the founding of the CAF back in 1957. You know, they created the vision to have one of every Allied aircraft flying. They had been looking for B-29 for years and years. Finally, in 1971, some of our pilots were flying over China Lake, looked down and saw a row of B-29s. That kind of got the ball rolling. Eventually, it was a challenge because at that point, the Navy held the ownership of them, but they did not have them on the books as B-29s. They were targets. So it took a long process to actually recognize that they're there. Finally, they were given permission to go into the desert, retrieve one. She's now known as Fifi. Took about 3 months to go through her, get her so she could fly this roughly 6 hours down to Harlingen, Texas, which is where we were based at that point. They flew her out about 6 hours later with Randy Sohn, who was out here yesterday when we got here, one of our long, long time pilots. Landing in Harlingen, took about 3 years, totally went through her. In 1974, we started flying, named Fifi, in honor of Vic Agather's wife. Vic Agather was one of the guys that really spearheaded this. And essentially since 1974, with the exception of 4 years recently, we've been doing this, taking around the country, week by week, different cities.
That's incredible. Now, are parts problems, parts availability an issue?
Parts are not necessarily an issue. The new engines now are readily available. All the parts for the new engines are readily available. Unlike the old engines, which were hard to maintain, always broke down, and they were original to the B-29. And back in the day, as many people know, the airplane was rushed into service and production. So were the engines, and during the period of the two and a half years that they were building the engines, there was over 6,000 design changes to those engines to try to make them better.
So you're saying you not only you've actually changed the engine completely to a different type.
We've gone to it's still a Wright 3350, but it's a newer version. It's a version that was used in Vietnam on C-119 gunships, Sky Raiders, in commercial application, similar to the early Connies and DC-7s. And so it's a very reliable engine.
What were the maintenance issues you were having with the older engines?
We just had engine failure after engine failure, and the only way we kept it running for all those years is that we had an abundance of engines, and that's the same thing they did back in the war. They just, when they had a failure, they just put another engine on.
And eventually those engines ran out.
Eventually they ran out.
Wasn't that airplane also known for throwing propellers every now and then?
That has occurred, but never with us.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah.
That's a big prop to be throwing. I was up at World War II weekend when you guys had Fifi up there. And I remember from 1985, when Fifi was out at Millville, I remember seeing four men per blade pulling each engine through. Now, I was there helping the crew at Yankee Lady pulling a B-17's propellers through. And with two men on there, that's a pretty good rush. But I noticed that you guys don't do that by hand anymore. I heard from one of the members of Yankee Lady that you guys are actually using the starter to crank the engines through. Isn't that a little dangerous?
It's actually safer than pulling them through. When you have two people on a 8-foot long blade, that's a long arm, and two people could actually do more damage than the starter. The starters are made with a clutch that will break loose if they hit a hydraulic lock. So when we turn them over, we are just bumping them through, just momentarily hitting the starter. We do it for about six blades, and that way we know that there's not a hydraulic lock, and then we can.
And then you can turn them over.
Yeah.
That's wild. I never knew that, and I figured there was a good reason to it, because I remember seeing four men per blade, and they were really pulling on that. So there's a lot of compression there, obviously.
Now, what are the systems on the airplane? Does it have hydraulically boosted controls?
No.
No, it's all manual cables and levers, and
yeah, it's kind of a big four-engine J3 Cub, if you will. It's all manual. The only thing on the hydraulic on the airplane, we have a 2.5-gallon hydraulic tank that is for the brakes, and everything else, it's like flying a big J3 Cub.
Wow,
trimming
just a lot heavier,
trimming a little bit of muscle power. Yes.
Well, the flight engineer on this airplane, he's got to be a busy guy on this, because the pilot is flying the airplane, the co-pilot's helping out, but it's the flight engineer who's like setting all the mixtures and the prop controls as per the pilot's command. The only thing the pilot gets to play with are the throttles. How busy is the flight engineer on this airplane?
Well, if you've ever watched a organist playing the Bach fugue, yeah, I think he never has enough hands, fingers, and arms, and sometimes I think they want to get their foot up there to help. and Dave can better explain it. It is a tremendous job. For those pilots or crew members that have ever flown a three-man airplane in the old days on a 727, 747, and obviously the Connie things, we used to say the engineer owns the airplane, the pilot just gets to fly it for him, in other words, drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And that is 100% true on Fifi. The engineers, they own the airplane, and we just fly it for them.
One of the coolest things I've always thought about radial engines is starting them up. What's it like to light the engines off on Fifi?
It's a thrill every time. Just hope I get it right every time and not backfire it, because when you backfire an engine, it's beer for everyone. So.
Oh!
But, yeah, it's all hands-on, and it's just a feel that you get used to. When I say they all have their own personalities, they do. They all start just slightly different. Where you set the throttles and how much prime you give, and it's just technique. It just takes a little bit of time to get used to it.
Do you need an assistant to come up there and help you? Because
yeah,
I'd
right.
love to light one of those engines off. I mean, it's got to be it's got to be quite a task. Especially if it doesn't catch that first time, you've got to you got to wait till it winds down, and then you start all over again and hope that you get it the second time.
Yeah, that's the most embarrassing moment, is when you lose it and you got to redo it again. So, try not to let that happen too often.
What effects do 100 low lead have? I mean, the plane was designed to fly on 135, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So, what's it like?
The engine builders are building the engines for the 100 low lead, so the valve seats mainly are improved to accept that.
Well, do you have a, I mean, do you guys feel the horsepower loss? I guess not, since you've probably never flown it on 135.
The engines that are on this airplane now and the horsepower they develop, and Paul will attest to this, this airplane flies and climbs and gets down the runway faster than any other B-29 there's ever been. And at the weights we fly, it's a dream. It's really a dream.
Well, I was going to say, because you're not flying with a full combat load. You know, you don't have a full crew. You don't have all the guns, ammunition, the bombs, and all that stuff. So even if you're carrying a full crew and full load of fuel, you're still light compared to wartime B-29s. So you're saying that basically the engine manufacturer has set the engines to run up on 100 octane low lead, and you're not losing any power at all from, you know, the differences in the gasoline.
There's probably a loss, but I wouldn't have anything to compare that to. So
you're just flying here. This is how you've known the airplane, and that's good with you.
That's good with me.
That's wonderful. How much fuel are you burning an hour on that airplane?
Well, I plan for 500 gallons the first hour, and that's with the run up and the takeoff and the climb out, and then a 400 gallon burn in cruise.
And at $5.50 a gallon, that's a lot of dollar bills going out the tailpipes.
Yep, you do the math.
Oh, man. And you guys are selling rides on the airplane, but not here, we understand. You guys were very busy at Reading earlier this year. They had, probably 7 or 8 aircraft giving rides, and we saw Fifi flying the entire weekend there, World War II weekend. Where can you sit when you're on the airplane getting a ride?
There are 3 different places you can sit on the airplane, and the price will reflect where you sit. We have 6 seats back in the gunner's compartment, which are back in the waist blister area. There are 6 seats there. Those go for $595 a piece. Then we have 3 seats up in the cockpit, which are $995 a piece. And they sit just behind the pilot, the co-pilot, flight engineer, and you're literally looking over their shoulders. And then there is one very special seat up at the Bombardier. And that one costs $1,495. And almost every place we've gone, that is the first seat that sells out. And it is a tremendous view. Once you get up, once we climb out, get cleaned up and so forth, we allow the passengers, with the exception of the Bombardier, to kind of move around a little bit so they can look out and so forth. Our upcoming schedule can be found on our website, which is rideb29.com. Nice and easy to remember that way. After we leave here on Sunday, we're going to St. Louis for a couple days, then we're going down to Memphis, then we're going to get a little maintenance break, let Dave take a look at everything, make sure things are good, and then we'll be hitting the road up to Nebraska, and then eventually in October we'll be touring around Texas.
Nice.
Very good. Well, this is Digital Dave
and Fast Eddie. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back with part 2.